Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, Brother Bonham. I can't hear you on this side.
Radio. Please hold and you'll be able to listen to the show.
We've got to stop this snowball from getting bigger and bigger.
So, Tom, let's talk about the Fed. They're expected to raise interest rates again this month. Any guidance on how high they might eventually go?
The market is expecting another 10 quarters. Maybe a 4 percentage point high in September. And you know, mortgage rates are not only connected to what the Fed, but they are influenced by how the Fed moves. So, mortgage rates move up over the course of the next few weeks and months.
All right, Tom Costello, starting us off. Thank you. To make this story tonight, rage after the surveillance video found the shooting was publicly some victims shown to them first. And new questions being raised.
Tonight's war bomber from that study given back posted by the author of the statement to the website and other
okay, this is Bilal Bynum. Can you hear me now? Brother Sam, can you hear me?
Yes, I'm with you.
Okay. And the noise you're hearing here, let me get away. I have to step away because I'm not on the direct commute. I'm not on the direct commute. So we all are speaking from the line. But again, this is the New Africa Business Association, and we're going to continue our conversation on natural disasters. Sister Aisha, are you with us? Sister Aisha, are you with us? Okay, so I'm sure she's going to come on and be sure my co-host, Brother Isaiah, are you with us? All right, Brother Harris, you and I are just going to get started until they come on. Again, like you were saying, we've been talking about natural disasters. We're going to continue our conversation, but we know what, and we've been talking about preparing for a natural disaster before the disaster occurs. Jim, we've been talking about how we recover from a natural
disaster
after it happens.
After it happens.
And we've been having a spokesperson that is associated with
FEMA
that's been giving us some very informative
information.
So, Mr. Asa, when she comes on, I'm saying she will be continuing
her conversation.
But at the same time, one of our disasters that's been with us for quite a while is business. Brothers and sisters,
Black Belt Wall Street,
if it could just redo, or if African Americans could look into the value of what Black Belt Wall Street in the business program that Booker T.
Washington
and Black Belt Wall Street made together
and how they finance the entire Black Belt.
And a person who's going to really bring us up to date on this information is the person I am about to present
right now,
and also bring us up to
date
on businesses
that
Black Belt and New
Africa
Fitness Association are doing
as we speak,
and we're certainly inviting all the community to join us. So without further ado, Brother Sam Harris, welcome to the show. Brother Harris.
Yes, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes,
loud and clear.
All right. Now the system is echoing. I just want to make sure that it's not echoing.
I don't know why we did that echo.
Let me see
if there's something I can do about it.
Okay. All right. That might be it. Okay. Well, welcome everyone. This is Sam Harris. A developer out of Tampa, Florida. We have been engaging with New Africa Business Association as Black Belt Wall Street for the last 18 months. And there is a lot of opportunity within the African American community. We need for more of us to get involved. So for those of you that are not familiar with the Black Belt District, the Black Belt District is a term that was first used by Booker T. Washington. And it was because of the color of the soil from the region from Galveston,
Texas,
all the way up to Harlem, New York.
And this was the
highest
concentration
of African American slaves, which is what built the wealth of America. So from Texas to New York, Black Belt Wall Street is helping reshape America because the demographics are moving. More of our families are moving to the South, and what we're focused on as a group is that we're focused on top five cities. Selma, Alabama is ground zero. Tampa, Florida, Detroit, Baltimore, and Washington, D.C. Those are five out of 150 cities that have been redlined, sidelined, every type of deprivation of capital possible has happened to those areas. And we are focused on those like a laser beam to redevelop the Black Belt District that will consist of African-American entrepreneurs that are owning at least 51% of an entire city block. Not 51% of a business, not 51% of an idea, but 51% of an entire city block is what we are focused on and what we are doing. And we need for more of us to get involved
on the development side, helping us not only identify new industries, but also investment capital for those that have dollars that they want to invest. We can have a private conversation offline. Couple updates that we have. The project in Selma, we're working on a boutique hotel, a coffee roastery that will be a franchise that will go to those 150 cities that we're talking about, a family-friendly restaurant, and the opportunity is enormous. Now, I want you to write this down. The top 1% of the households that own commercial real estate control 81% of the commercial real estate market. And less than a tenth of the people that are in that 1% are African Americans. We want to change that through the Black Belt Wall Street by developing Black Belt districts, getting more of us to be owners of entire city blocks, developing new manufacturing, IT, technology, new restaurant franchises, new modes of businesses, new services, new housing development. There is an array of opportunity for us to be able to work together, but we have to get involved now. We cannot wait, because wait is what broke the bridge. We need, for African-American men and women, it doesn't matter what your background is, as long as you have like mind and you want to see the future be better for the next generation, we need you to be involved, not just in this movement. This is us developing what we call legacy. You cannot develop legacy without owning something. We have to create more ownership within the businesses throughout the communities all across America, from D.C. to Tampa to Little Haiti to Chicago to Detroit, Oakland to Selma to Tuskegee to Tulsa, Oklahoma to Dallas, Texas, Houston to Galveston, Texas. When we look at, we just celebrated Juneteenth a little less than 3 weeks ago, that we were celebrating Juneteenth. Well, the grandmother of Juneteenth is in Texas, and she's in an area called Fort Worth, Texas. The projects that are coming on board right now, here are the top 10 projects. In Fort Worth, Texas, the African-American Juneteenth Museum. That museum would be in excess over $50 million development. In Chicago, there is new hotel developments that's over $100 million that's owned by African American Development Group. In Selma, Alabama, a new hotel development, coffee franchise, family-friendly restaurant, over $50 million development. In Tampa, Florida, a new multifamily commercial district, Black Belt District, being created in Tampa, Florida. Tampa, Florida is the number one real estate market in all of America. 23% of the residents that live in Tampa are African American, but less than 1% of them have any ownership in commercial real estate. The opportunity for this new development is over $100 million. The question is, how many of you are going to participate in this new wealth that's being developed and built all across America? The cards have been reshifted. The tables have been reset. Are you at the table? Are you participating? Are you bringing not just your ideas, but are you bringing your capital, your human capital, and your intellectual capital and your financial capital to work? That's what we need with the Black Belt District. We got three more projects to go. In Washington, D.C., we have another development group that is doing a hydroponic system that is over $10 million. In Maryland, we have another company that's doing a hydro system that has hydro fuel cells, that is going to be owned by an African-American engineer that has developed the technology to create hydro fuel to run the cars of the future. Then we got another technology company that is doing clean energy, where they're developing a technology that cleans hotel facilities and museums with robots, and that's out of Cleveland, Ohio. This is a $100 million IT tech investment. We need for entrepreneurs that are within our community, within our diaspora, to be able to come together. For 18 months, Brother Bynum, we have been sounding the alarm very, very strong to our community, that we don't need you just to talk about what we need to do or talk about what should have been done or what could have been done. Get in the game now. Let's do it now. And invest into not only the projects that we just talked about. If you have a project in your community, if there's something that you want to bring to market in Elizabeth, North Carolina, or Greenville, South Carolina, or Atlanta, Georgia, or South Georgia, or North Florida, or somewhere in Oklahoma or Texas or Kansas City, St. Louis, wherever it's at, if you got a project that you want to bring to market, get with our development team to see if it's viable, to see if we can help you put the pieces together so that the opportunity for you to create this opportunity in your market and create that Black Belt District to where you are the person that is not only developing it, you're managing that, and you're creating new opportunities for people within your community. So with no further ado, Brother Bynum, that's kind of a recap on where we're at. Those are the top 10 projects that we have individuals investing in. We need high-growth entrepreneurs. We need investors that really want to invest, not just talk about it. And one of the things that I'm so tired of hearing is that African-Americans don't have any money, that they can't rub two nickels together. That's not true. We have over $1.7 trillion of spending power where we're spending our money somewhere. Why not start spending that money and practice group economics? And I'll end with this before I interject with any questions that people have and any feedback that you want to give me, Brother Bynum. The only way that we can win in these United States and compete in the global platform of entrepreneurship and capitalism, we have to practice group economics. We have to group our capital together, and instead of each of us doing 1,000 different projects, we honestly believe that Selma, Alabama is ground zero, is the gateway of opportunity for African-American ingenuity, entrepreneurship, and opportunity. If we can get it right in Selma, Alabama, we can take that blueprint and we can go to any city and duplicate it. So, Brother Bynum, I yield back. I'll engage for questions that people may have and talk about some of the things that we're doing. But we need real investors to come to the table with capital, ready to go to work. We've been sounding alarm for over 18 months. It's time for us to put up or shut up.
Again, our mics are open. If you have questions or anything pertaining to what you just heard, our mics are open. We welcome your questions.
Good evening, Mr. Harris.
Your comments. I'm sorry,
good evening. Hi, how are you doing, sister?
Yes, this is Madam Aisha. I thank you for your presentation. And I would like to know how would we go about getting in touch with you. There are organizations who are really looking to finance businesses, and I like your, I'm glad that you practice the concept of group economics, because that is the way that we're going to excel. So perhaps, although I'm in the environmental sector and it's all about our survival as well as our economic survival, I would like for you to be in touch with me, or me be in touch with you, and that I will be able to pass your name and your information on to people that I know who have resources and are actually looking for a project. So
okay,
perhaps
great.
We can perhaps we
oh,
can,
absolutely. Absolutely, Sister Aisha. I would definitely love to do that.
And I will put you all together and let you talk about this, because
okay,
in the international world of finance, there are resources and there are people within our African-American community who are putting together groups to access those resources because they know how to access them, but they need numbers and they need businesses that are credible or that can participate with the larger body. So If you want me to, I'm more than happy to put you with them.
Oh, absolutely, Sister Aisha. I can give you my direct office number right now. And
okay,
it's 813-358-5947.
5947. Let me repeat that. 813-358-5947. Okay.
That is correct.
Was
and
that correct?
The company name is SamGen Residential Commercial Realty. We are a real estate brokerage,
oh,
commercial and residential.
You have to spell that. What did you say, Sam? What?
It is SamGen. That's SamGen
uh-huh.
Residential
uh-huh.
and Commercial Realty.
Okay.
So we are a brokerage
okay.
and a development firm, and we're out of Tampa, Florida.
And do you have your website?
Our web address. Our web address is www.samgen,
yes.
That's SamGen,
uh-huh.
Realty, realty.com.
Very good. Okay.
All right, and I definitely would love to engage with you for sure. And one of the things with what you're doing, teaching on the disaster recovery, and that is a big part of what we need in our community. And I was speaking with Brother Bonham about this.
Brother Harris.
Go ahead.
Brother Harris.
Yes, sir.
Brother Harris. I know Sister Aisha. Sister Aisha is not a disaster person. Sister Aisha is a serious, huge business lady.
Okay.
Now, you're talking another Sister Aisha. The one you're talking about is well-known in high places. So she's
fantastic.
A person to take extremely serious, and her references are to be taken extremely serious. We're honored to have you on with us tonight, Sister Aisha, and we look forward to your continuing to work with us. So,
absolutely. I was with these people just a few days ago. And interesting that now you are here tonight. So all praise is due to Allah. Things work in time and on time. So what I will do is give them your information. They are go on your website, and I will encourage them to be in touch with you. Okay?
Okay,
and
fantastic.
You all talk about this.
Yes,
and one of
yes.
the
sounds good.
Will probably be contacting you as a man by the name of Ibrahim Mustafa.
Okay, that was Ibrahim?
Ibrahim, I-B-R-A-H-I-M, Mustafa.
Okay.
And he is one of the primary principals with the International Funding Group. So I'll ask him to be in touch with you.
Okay, great.
Thanks so
all
much.
Right.
Thanks. And again, our mics are still open. We welcome your comments, our questions. Our mics are open. All right, well, then, Brother Harris, you know, as we've been saying, and what you just talked about, and as we've been saying for years, Every community in the African in our African American communities, if you go into the black communities, you will not find businesses, very low commerce. And as we know, anytime you don't have commerce in any community, the community is considered a ghost town. And all of
yes.
our black communities are no more than ghost towns. But it is one of the best investments in the United States to start businesses for African Americans. I mean, there are so many facts to what I am saying, and the same thing you know, Brother Harris, and that is – and I didn't get this year's report, But last year, statistics reported that we spent more than $1.7 trillion in consumer spending. And I don't think the following year, which I don't have the reports on, I don't think it has changed. As a matter of fact, I'm almost sure it has increased. But the last report that the New Africa Black Belt Wall Street received is FYI, and this was 2021, we spent more than $1.7 trillion, and that was just in consumer spending. Brother Harris, you hit that nail right on the head when you said African Americans are not broke peoples. That shows worldwide that when it comes to the power of the African American dollar, we rank fifth as a nation. We're ranked right there with both South Africa, not South Africa, South Korea and North Korea. And they said we're just about equal to the buying powers of Great Britain. So that's how powerful this is, just our African-American communities. Now, of course, we know what redlining has done, and that was done by our federal government and all of our business associates, and that's been going on now for over 100 years. And the effect of redlining is still going on. But we can use that to our advantage by doing just what Black Belt Wall Street New Africa Business Association, along with and Brother Harris, is the one who bought us Black Belt Wall Street. So we're working together to bring back the success of what we were during the time of segregation, because during the time of segregation, black folks, communities, that was one of our most profitable times, was really during the time of segregation. Our money stayed in our communities. How many months before it left the communities, Brother Harris, or how many days?
So it stayed in our community for well over 9 months when segregation was happening. Now today in our community, it stays in our community less than 3 days. Some people may say even 3 hours, because we don't have ownership within our community. And one of the things that we have been studying is that assets buy wealth. When you look at owner-occupied properties, 76% of white Americans own a home. 45% of African Americans own a home. That is a huge gap. So home ownership is one key, but what is even bigger than home ownership, and we all miss it every day that we drive by commercial buildings and retail outlets, 86% of the wealth of America is in commercial real estate. 86%. Of the wealth. And the top 1% of America owns 81% of that wealth. If we want to create a domino effect within our community that can create generational wealth and leave a legacy, we have to start developing large parcels of land, whether it be a city block or it be a rural area that we can take land and redevelop and create our own communities, to where we own and control the commerce within our community, because you're not going to get wealthy owning one or two homes. You can get wealthy owning one or two city blocks, because that revenue is constant. When a small business signs that lease, it's a long-term lease, plus that is a more valuable asset. So if you needed to leverage that asset or go to your bank to get more capital, you're more likely to get capital easier owning commercial real estate than if you're trying to use residential real estate. So we need to get more of our people understanding that the wealth that we once had in our communities in areas like Tulsa, Elizabeth, North Carolina, OC, Florida, Rosewood, Southern Atlanta, and all other places all across the country,
is because our businesses own the buildings. When you own those buildings, it creates not only cash flow, but it's an asset that allows you to leverage to bring in more capital. So I'm encouraged by what we're seeing. Sister Aisha, I'm looking forward to working with you and would love to know more about what it is that you do, because absolutely this is the time for us to be working together.
Inshallah. Inshallah. Well, I'm on your website. I'm very impressed with it, and I'm quite willing to pass this on to the people who are actually directly involved with the finances. So this is very impressive. So thank you for being here tonight and speaking to us. And let's see. It'll be up to you and those people. I will certainly recommend this to them.
Fantastic.
Yes, ma'am. All right. Again, our mics are open for those of you who have comments or like to ask the questions. Or make a statement. Our mics are open.
Hello.
Hello. Good evening. Walaikum salam.
This is Sister Rahima, Tulsa, Oklahoma. I'm trying to find out, I'm sorry somebody interrupted me while you were talking.
No. Glad to hear from you, Sister.
Yes, sir. It's good to be on. Thank you, Sister Ursa Stone. Because I forgot. I'm trying to find out, did the brother say that he had a pending project for Tulsa?
Yes, we do have a group that is working in Tulsa. They are developers. They're going to be helping with a project in Tuskegee.
The name of it? The group? You know, remember?
Yeah, I can't disclose the client confidentiality, but we do have groups that we're working with in Tulsa.
Okay. I'm in Tulsa. I'd like to be, I'd like to zero in on that. Thank you.
All right. You're quite welcome.
And let me just go and add, brothers and sisters, like I was just saying, in the African-American communities, New Africa Business Association, Black Belt, Wall Street, we know that there are business needs in all of our communities everywhere you go in this country. Therefore, by pooling our monies, the development that you're hearing, and like I said, we are able to develop according to the investors that come forward and put together a program, and whether it be in Tulsa, whether it be in Selma, whether it be in Detroit. But once a group is able to come together and put together a program, an investment program, that is, then we go in and we start developing in that Black community. Our objective is to develop in every Black community in our country. Why? To keep the dollar bill in our communities. And the way we can only keep our dollar bills in our communities, when it comes to goods and services, we have to provide goods and services to each other. And in order to do that, we must have the businesses right there in the communities, of where our clientele can easily be served. And so that's why we want to put businesses in every community, saying that to say we're looking to become each other's assets. You didn't hear Brother Harris say the first thing about we went to any banks and borrowed any monies. No, because by becoming each other's assets, we can go and buy these properties, pay cash for them, and grow. And now we all own, and that word own, we can't emphasize it enough, because that's what we as African Americans must start doing, is owning. The thing that scares me to death is that we have so many African Americans renting, and we know what's happening right now with rent. And we can see the greed others have over you when you don't own your own property. Others are in control, and when I say others, 9 times out of 10, is going to be Caucasians. That's going to be in charge of you because they're in charge of you financially. You are dependent on them to have a roof over your head, even though you buy renting. So own your own properties, and the best place to own these properties is in the communities that we left. That migration, that where we migrated out of the communities back during the early 40s and 50s, now it's time to migrate back to those communities because that's where you're going to find your asset, your values. But when we go back to those communities, by becoming each other's asset, we own the communities. We own everything in that community. So, again, that's what when we start talking about we're developing here, we're developing there, we're doing it because we have groups that have come together and pool our funds together and enable us to develop. Now, let me say something since I'm on that note. And Sam will tell you more about this. Down in Selma, Alabama, yes, we have purchased some very valuable properties with the investors that came forward. We collared for investors for years. Over 2 or 3 years, we kept asking for investors to come in to buy these properties while they were cheap. Why they was affordable. The reason they was cheap is because white folks had abandoned the city of Selma, left it, they had turned the lights out. Black folks down there was living under candle lights. So again, that's what happens when we went in. It was cheap. But now that they found out that what they left, how valuable it is and the value that's coming, I don't know if Brother Harris mentioned the John Lewis Memorial Center, but he'll tell you more about that. But there are values that are coming to Selma that is going to bring in a huge amount of tourists coming to Selma and other adventures. But saying that to say, when these groups came back to Selma, and I say these groups, and groups other than African Americans came back, they came back now and they wanted to start buying back. We couldn't compete with them in buying additional properties. Why? Because we can't get investors as quick as Caucasians can. They can put together groups and bring up $5, $10, $15 million, $20 million in a week's time. It takes us, I don't know, way too long. So again, brothers and sisters, look, and I study because I'm wondering, after going through the disasters that you are going through right now, financial disasters, why can't you see what I see, and that is the value of going back to the community that is affordable, and that is the community that we migrated from. We need to go back and put and build our own communities, keep our cash flow coming back in. And we can only do that, though, by you seeing the value of putting businesses right back in your communities. And because, again, that's where it's affordable. And you don't have to wait a long time. I wouldn't suggest trying to do this by yourself. Why try to do something by yourself when we can pool together groups as to where we can come up with $1 million? Just like that, it's easier for a group to raise funds and to buy valuable properties rather than say, I am going to do it because I am going to go. It's going to take quite a while. And our African American communities are going to be bought up if we don't go back and buy them. So with that said, Brother Harris, I'm going to go back to you.
But before
we're going to see if we have any comments from our audience, and if so, we still welcome your comments. But if there are no comments, then Brother Harris, please just come right on in.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
This is Sister Rahim again. Brother Bilal, you know when we were with Black Wall Street USA, it was a real struggle to try to get people not only to invest in North Tulsa, but to just their human resources. Brother Harrison was talking about. I had people lined up who wanted to do something, but they insisted, you've got to pay me first. And so what I found out was that our people, I don't know about so much about other places, but I know a lot in Baltimore and especially in Tulsa, Oklahoma, people have been promised money that they never got for work that they did. And so now they're burnt out and they don't, I worked with Salvation Army and there were people who would come to the day center and ask people to come and work when they were working on the big, what do you call that big monstrosity, the Pacific Center, whatever they call it. And they say, okay, we're going to pay you minimum wage if you come and work for us. And these are homeless people who will go and work for them and then they wouldn't pay them. And these are like black and white. And so a lot of this was going on, especially in our community. And so whoever's working I commend them that they're able to get black people in North Tulsa who do, some of them do have money, you know, but we are losing a lot of our properties because just like you said about Selma, the white folks see the value of the property. The property's proud, the value has gone up exponentially just because white folks have begun to move back in. So, if you can do something with that problem of building up the confidence of the people that they can trust people, please let me know how you do it so I can help you and we can get this show on the road. Thanks for letting me share.
Thank you, Sister Rahim. Thank you so much. You really hit on a very important thing that we have to overcome. So
right.
What we did about 2.5 years ago, we stopped saying you can't trust an African-American business or you can't get good service. That's not true. The African-American people that I do business with or people that invest with us are honorable people. They do great business. We have been sold a bill of goods to tell each other that we can't do business with each other.
I got them on the meeting.
Can you hear me?
There's
somebody else on the line.
Please,
somebody needs to mute the line.
Please mute yourself
on the line.
If you're not speaking. Go right ahead.
All right. Thank you. All right. So what we have to do is that we have to stop saying we can't do business with each other because that is a myth. And the way that we overcome a lot of what Sister Rahima was talking about in North Tulsa and other places alike, we have to stop living in the past. I'm not saying forget about the past, but when you keep reliving what happened, you cannot move forward. You have to come up with a strategic plan and a group of like-minded individuals that understand that the most valuable asset that we have in our community is real estate. Without real estate, you cannot do nothing. You can't have a hospital without a real estate. You can't have a sandwich shop without a real estate. You can't have a real estate office without a real estate. You can't have anything without real estate, a manufacturing, technology. It all takes real estate in order for it to happen. And unfortunately, in our communities, we want to see things happen too easy. There is no such thing as building wealth easy. It's hard to build wealth. But the easiest way for us to do it is to group together, practice group economics. And as Brother Bilal was speaking, I was thinking about what he was saying. Real estate is the most valuable asset that we have. We have been out here for 18 plus months talking to people all across the country why to invest in African-American communities. And then you have this thing come out called Bitcoin.
You had African Americans putting their whole life savings in Bitcoin. You had to put their retirement plans in Bitcoin. You had to put the kids' education in Bitcoin. Now that Bitcoin is going down, they've lost everything that they had because they leveraged their mortgage to buy Bitcoin. If they had to just put the money into buying properties in Selma, Alabama, like we asked them to do, they would have doubled their investment by 5 times in 2 years. Because while we were quietly acquiring buildings, a lot of other groups were quietly acquiring buildings. And because of the influx of capital in Selma, the real estate values have gone up 5 times. Here's an example. We had an African-American developer that listened to the information that Brother Bilal and I were providing. They bought 7 buildings for $400,000. Listen to me, 7 buildings for $400,000, over 100,000 square feet. As of yesterday, that $400,000 investment they made 2 years ago is worth $3.7 million. Much more valuable than Bitcoin. And here's the thing. They're going to make a lot more money because they're going to create businesses to go inside of those buildings. They're going to be paying monthly rent, making the value of the real estate even more valuable. So we have to stop telling each other that we don't have the money, that we can't get African Americans to work together. Because when we want to do something, we do it. Unfortunately, there have been a lot of people that have promised a lot of things. Here's the good news. We are not those people. We are putting our money where our mouth is. Not only are we buying the buildings and making developments, we're also making a platform for other people to be able to do it for themselves. So this is not about us, me, or I. It's about we. How can we, as a diaspora, a group, come together, practice group economics, so that we can own and control the block? It doesn't matter if it's Tulsa, Oklahoma, or Selma, Alabama. We need to have a laser beam focus and come together so that we can do something and make a mark that can never be erased. Here's the last thing on Selma. Here's what's coming. We have the John Lewis Memorial Theater coming. That's an over $25 million investment. We have a Foot Soldiers Park coming. That's over a $10 million investment. We have new industries that are coming. Aviation. They just announced an aviation company is coming to Craig Air Force Base that has been desolate for over 40 years. They're getting ready to go into the new technology of having an aerodynamic space center to where they're going to be training the air traffic controllers of the future in Selma, Alabama. They're going to need housing. They're going to need food. They're going to need medical. They're going to need entertainment. If you want to build wealth, I am telling you as loud as I can, if you don't get with us, you need to get with somebody, and you need to be buying property that you can develop into that area because all of the capital is going that direction. In addition to the aerodynamic and aeronautical companies coming to Selma, Alabama, we have new industries of automobile manufacturers coming, a new highway system that's over $4 billion that's getting ready to bring more commerce to Selma to where products, goods, and services can be delivered. They have a new transit system for a train to be coming from Atlanta to Selma. You cannot become wealthy sitting on the sideline. You cannot become wealthy only owning a home. You have to own commercial real estate, and I'm telling you, the best place for you to do it is Selma, Alabama. That is ground zero for opportunity. I can't say it much louder and much clearer. Let's stop talking about what other people have done in the past. Let's start talking about what we're doing right now so that we can change our community, that we can change the next generation. That's what we have to be about. And if anybody you come across says something that you can't work with them, you can't trust them, or I invested into them, they didn't promise me, get away from those people because they're going to give you, you're going to get exactly what they have, which is nothing. You got to get around individuals that are not talking in that manner.
pretty passionate about the, but is.
Right here, Brother Harris. Again, our mics are open. Our mics are open.
Right.
If you have any comments or questions, Brother Harris, we welcome your comments.
Absolutely.
We welcome your comments. Anyone have any comments about our discussion so far? Questions, comments? We welcome your comments.
All right. Well, since we don't have any questions or comments, Brother Bynum, I want to, before we wind up here, we got a few more minutes.
I got an email
earlier from the Bookings Institute. The Bookings Institute says the number one divider of creating wealth in America for African Americans is the lack of ownership in commercial real estate.
Yep.
And right now, the only way that we can change this around is that we need to get more of us owning real estate at a very high demand. So what I'm going to encourage people to do, if you have a project or you want to be a part of a project, you can call our office. It's 813-358-5947. Go to our website, go to the comment where it says comment and tell us.
I'm cutting you in.
Sorry,
cutting you in.
So the
can
website,
you repeat it,
it is sjerelt.com.
Can you repeat the phone number?
Telephone number is 813-358-5947.
The website didn't come in clear.
Okay, the website is www.samjenrealty.com.
Got it. All right, thank you.
All right, you're quite welcome. And as we're speaking right now, we have groups that do not look like us that are going in buying 300-400 acres of land. And as Brother Bynum was talking earlier, he was talking about the Great Migration, how our families migrated to the Northeast, the Midwest, and the West Coast. What's starting to happen now is our families are starting to migrate back to the South. As they migrate back to the South, we do not have the infrastructure in place to support their current needs. So there is an abundance of opportunity for us to create new wealth by creating new housing development, new multifamily, new entertainment districts, new business districts that we can own and control.
Let me just ask a question, Brother Harris, while we're there. Is Director Stone out of Texas? Are you with us, Director Stone?
He's on the line.
Good afternoon. Yes, Brother Blau, I'm here.
Director Stone, I know you guys have been doing some serious investments down in Texas and other places. Bring us up to date, because, see, brothers and sisters, this is an example of organizations all over, and these are African Americans. And so again, Brother Director Stone, bring us up to date on some of the activities, investment opportunities, and some of the growth that you guys are doing down in Texas, especially what you are doing.
Well, good afternoon, everyone. I hope that, can you hear me okay?
Yes,
we can hear you.
Okay. One of the things that I would strongly advise our listeners on tonight is not only investing in property, but make sure your properties are put into a trust LLC for your own protection. This is something that I did not know about until possibly a year or so ago, because it's one thing to own property, and then when some of the Caucasians find out what your worth is, they will do anything possible to try to take it away from you. So please, please get with financial advisors and protect your property, protect your homestead, and that's some free advice. What we're currently working on, Brother Bilal, is building new homes, flipping them. Also, there's a property that we're looking at for Airbnb that's going to be included in the financing of the new homes that we're building. The website is not up yet because of some litigation cases that we have going on, but as soon as that website is created, I'm going to forward that over to you so that you can get it on your business site. I know that George is on the phone, and I have maybe about 20, 25 people that are on the phone tonight. I'm not going to ask them all to unmute themselves, but they came on. Yes, sir.
I am going to be turning this whole thing over to you and Joyce and the rest of you in about 5 to 10 minutes. We're doing the business section first, and then we'll be going to our disaster release for our second hour. So you guys are getting ready to turn it over to you, and you can all of your folks will get a chance to participate with you, but so that just stay on with us. But I wanted to bring you on at that point because I wanted to show all of our listeners the example of what's going on with our Black Belt Wall Street New Africa Business Association. We are getting, and hopefully we can reassure them to start getting involved and start participating, and most of all, start investing. Now, you did make a wonderful point, Beth, when you were talking about, it's like, who is going to hold the money? Because unethical talks, when I say unethical, when we're not really talking good ethical business, those types of questions come up. But when it comes to good ethical business, everything is put into place, and saying that to say I'm going to bring on, and Brother Harris just mentioned it, New Africa Business Association, Black Belt Wall Street, our directors and all of our principals that is running this organization are some sort of financial professionals. Myself, I am a certified financial planner, 40 years, semi-retired, but still I'm licensed. Brother Harris is also an investor in both finance and real estate. I'm going to bring on, we have our own attorney, Miss Williams. I don't think she's with us tonight, but plenty of times you've heard her come on. All the tools that it takes to have good professional advice, this is who runs our organization. I am going to bring on a person. I'd like to take about 5 to 10 minutes to speak, and this is our accountant, our CPA, and she is going to tell you something about incorporating, and this is how you can reassure yourself that your money is protected because it's not controlled by any of us. So, Ms. Baker, are you with us? Ms. Baker out of Georgia, are you with us? Ms. Baker out of Baker Finance, are you with us? Okay, I thought I had her with her. I thought I saw her a few moments ago. But like I was saying, brothers and sisters, all the professionals that that are needed to put together everything we're talking about here. We all of us are licensed professionals, and we're here, and there are plenty of you out there that are listening that are licensed professionals. We're asking you to start joining the Black Belt New Africa Business Association so we can do a business all over this. But we need our professionals to come forward, because you're the ones who are going to have to lead our communities and good financial advice. And with that said, Brother Harris, I'm going to turn it back to you. I'm going to let you close out the business section of our program.
All right. Thank you so much, Brother Bonham. I just want to thank everybody for joining tonight. It's a very crucial time for us in our communities all across America. We really have to get laser beam focused and not play the cards from the past, but let's start practicing group economics so that not only can we win, that our families can win, and the future generations can win. So please get in touch with us. If you have questions about different projects that are going on, hit the comment section, and we look forward to hearing from you. And I want to thank you all for your time. It's an absolute privilege. And Brother Bonham, I turn it back over to you.
Thanks so much, Brother Harris. And just before we go, again, any questions or comments for Brother Harris before he leaves, we still welcome your comments. Okay, with that said, now I'm going to ask, do we have Sister Aisha of Allen, North Carolina? Sister Aisha, are you with us yet? Okay, Sister Aisha's not with us yet. In that case, I'm going to have to turn it over to Oklahoma. Joyce, Director Williams, are you with us?
As-salamu alaykum, my brother and sisters,
well,
and good evening, everyone.
Well, alaykum salam. You know, I'm going to bring on your directors that will be assisting. Let's see if we have them all here. Well, again, I'm going to turn it right over to you. Going to Delaware. And Sister
well, brother
Sloan
Bynum,
out of
can
I'm sorry, go right ahead.
Brother Bynum, this is Sister Aisha.
Yes.
Can you not hear me?
Oh, Sister
can you
Aisha,
hear me?
I can hear you.
Well, you
I
know,
can hear you, Sister Aisha.
You know, maybe you couldn't hear me. I've been on all ever since we started an hour ago. We're having a very bad storm here.
Okay.
Really, very bad. And
well,
I think,
again, I want you, and when you start your conversation with us, because I'm turning it back over to you and Miss Williams. And Ms. Swan, and then you have Director Stone. So you have your entire group on with you. And so I guess I'll start off with you, and then you and your directors can start working from there. Again, I guess just before I did ask for out of Delaware, our director, my own sister. I'm getting to these names, but
yes.
Listen, sis, I'm sorry. I'm getting ready to call you Bynum. But and she's been a Bynum for 60 years or so. But but yes, my beloved sister out of Delaware.
Good evening.
Swan.
Good evening.
Yes.
I am always a Bynum.
Yes,
I'm married to a delightful Swan, but I am always a Bynum. That DNA is not going to change.
Listen, that's where I was going. I knew. I said, if I have to go back home, I'll just have to, because I could. I don't know why. I got so many names coming out of my head tonight. But no, so. Yes, and then, of course, we just heard from Director Stone. She is with us. So, Sister, you have all your directors. Sister Aisha, I'm turning it over to you.
I appreciate it so much. Thank you so much. And, Mr. Harris, we enjoyed your presentation, and certainly it was exciting to know what's going on financially or potentially financially within our community. And, yes, you know, some time ago, and I'll just only say this about the economics, those figures were quoted for the GDP of the African-American communities. And sometimes we have to take it for a grain of salt because when we go back and look at the basis for compiling data, sometimes we don't necessarily agree with the basis. But, however, when we looked at the GDP of our people in relationship to the GDP of countries of the world, we saw, and I'll just mention this quickly, that the GDP, that $1.7 trillion, was higher than countries like the Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Nigeria, South Africa, and Israel. So Kenya and Russia, Spain, Mexico, and Indonesia. So if we were an independent nation, we will have a larger GDP than all of these countries that I just named. And so when we look at it, it kind of saddens you to think that here we are a mighty force economically, but we are not organized, and we do not circulate the money within our communities. So that's what I was saying. And being in this environmental area, it saddens me also to know that a storm, a hurricane, can destroy, take away everything that you have worked so hard for over the So if I lose you all, it's because we are losing all kinds of power here. But I'm on a backup system now. Can you all still hear me?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Okay, I'm operating on a backup system now, and hopefully I will stay connected with you all. But if we look at what has happened in the last week and still happening in California to some extent, that the electrified burn that's taking place in Northern California that has already destroyed over 4,000, almost 4.5 acres of land. And it was only 93% contained. That was on Tuesday. Now, it has been active for 7 days on Tuesday, and it's probably at least 9 days now. So the consequences of that fire alone that put 6.4 million people under a heat alert, the consequences is going to be felt in other parts of the U.S. And this is some of the things we talk about in the workshop, in the training session that's going to start on this Saturday. From one side of the U.S., say the East Coast, to the West Coast, it's a little over 3,500 miles, you know, depending on the route that you take. It has already been proven that the consequences of disasters can extend anywhere from 1,000 to over 2,000 miles. Case in point, many of you heard about, remember in 2020 when we had Hurricane, it was the tropical storm Eta. Do you all remember that? Well, that started as a hurricane in Nicaragua, ended in Miami as a tropical storm. Now, that's over 2,100 miles. So storms we can feel the consequences of a storm from one part of the country to the other. We do expect that electro California is going to increase the heat dome that's settling certainly over the southeast coast. It's certainly affecting us here. That's why we're having some of these storms. But we can We cannot. If we don't do something to protect what we have and get prepared, we're going to suffer even more. And I can't stress this enough. As we build our economics, we must continue to do that. But we're going to have to protect our lives, or there will be no need of economics. So these are the consequences that we have to take seriously. And I want to encourage you all, if you haven't registered for the course on Saturday, get registered. And so you can get your template for your plan. And so when we go, and this is a complete preparedness plan, not a partial one, but a complete one. When we do approach the federal agencies, we can have the numbers of people who are coming forth who are prepared, completely prepared in every aspect of preparedness. And this is what we're going to discuss, show how to do, and hopefully get you prepared in this training course. Now, realize, and there's a lot of information online, and you can go online, and you can take months and months and months and months trying to cipher through it. But we want it to be relevant to our lives and the lives that we are confronted with. When our people go to the SBA, SBA gives out assistance now, emergency assistance. And it's not necessarily in the form of a loan. Some of it is a loan, but also they have grants. And our people need to know how to access those funds. And the more information you have, the more powerful you are and more willing you are to step forward. But we know, as Mr. Harris was saying, all of us are not going to step forward. We know that. We know that, and, you know, we can't pull you to the well to drink when you don't want to go. Some people, we just have to tell them, well, when you get yourself together, you come on. We'll be waiting for you. But we have to go on, and we have to do all those things that we know that will help us to survive. And the storm that we are having here in Durham right now is a clear indication. Other day, we had these huge trees to topple over onto the streets, huge trees. I've never seen trees around here so large. They came up from the root, from their roots. They didn't break off. They came up from the roots, which said to us, the soil is soggy and we're going to have a flood. And sure enough, you all, if you heard it, you heard the emergency alert, and it was a flash flood warning in effect until 11:15. I saw those trees lying in the street, and they were pulled up from their roots. And we knew this was going to happen. So we have to take action. The ones who are ready, alhamdulillah, we'll go with who's ready. And we'll keep appealing to others to get ready, to get ready. And we're going to talk about the issue of awareness versus conscious awareness. Because this is the issue that we had during the days of civil rights. Everybody knew we were being discriminated against, but it was only a handful that was ready to take action. And this is what we're going to talk about, some of those things, some of those emotional, social issues that we as a people have. I know that you all are ready. Joyce, you were ready to talk about that workshop the other day, right? That civil rights workshop?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Well, you go ahead. I was on there, and I'm excited to hear what you're going to say, and I'm excited to hear what Ms. Swan is going to talk about. So if it's okay with you, Ms. Swan, Joyce, could you just tell us about that workshop? And unless there's someone on the line to have a question for me, if not, then
yes,
we're
going to. I sound like I have a question.
Yes, sister.
Yes, ma'am. Before you go any further, I don't know what's happening in the rest of the country, but we had something similar like that to happen in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where a rain came and it got real cold and the untended trees wound up falling down in the street, and so nobody could get in and out. One of the things that we learned was that the food bank that was in our neighborhood in North Tulsa shut down. People ran to the food bank thinking they could get some food. They couldn't get it. The other thing that we discovered was that when later on working with AARP, we went down to help them out to source some food, and I asked the question, what happens if we have a crisis? How do we get food? So I said, who gets the food? The woman told us that Red Cross gets first dibs. And we know that Red Cross is not going to feed our community. They're going to take the food out and go somewhere else. That's what they did. That's what they did down in Louisiana. So I want to know, are we depending on any government facilities like Red Cross or the food banks in other cities? I know it's not working in Tulsa. I close my case to listen. I'm going on mute.
Yes, sister, and that's a good question. And let me tell you, that's why we have been emphasizing that we know the region that we live in. Everyone needs to be able to identify the region of the country they live in. There are 10 regions, and they are broken, and there are various states that are in these regions. You will know the regions you are in. You will be able to access the administrative structure in that region for emergency disaster, and those are the people who are responsible for identifying those services within the communities and establishing those services, okay? But if we are not communicating with them to tell them, yes, you have to put a service over here, you have to put this kind of service over there, they don't have any relationship with our community. So we have to take the leadership and direct them. So we will have the knowledge to sit down and address them. Frankly, I call them on the phone because I have their phone number, and you're going to have their phone numbers. I call them. I have these conversations with them, and they are asking us where are the needs. So I say to you, sister, we have to determine where the needs are. We have to tell them where they are. Then once we tell them where those needs are, they are held accountable, and we can hold them accountable. But we're going to have to do it. They are not. And like you said, the American Red Cross, they're going to be in certain communities, on certain strips, in certain isolated areas, but not inside of our communities. So I hope that answers your question. We have to become knowledgeable of this system. This is a new day now. And we have to become knowledgeable of the vocabulary. So when we call these people on the phone and tell them that we are dealing with mitigation, we will know what we're talking about, and they know the strength of that word. And so they're gonna let us without a doubt, because they are already asking, and I just simply called them to find out what they were doing. And they are asking, well, if you have something you would like for us to be aware of, let us know. That's because they don't have the knowledge. They don't have the information. They don't know anything about our communities. But we do. So right. It's incumbent upon
Sister Aisha, Brother Bynum.
Yes.
I also want you to know that Director Stone, she has a very large group that she wants to introduce, so I'm going to leave that information with you so you can use it as you can.
Okay, Sister Stone, I want you to know that, inshallah, I'll be calling you tomorrow anyway because I needed to talk to you. But, sister, I hope I answered your question. And if there's no other questions, Sister Joy?
But before we go to Sister Joyce, Sister Aisha, I just want the ladies that are attending the call tonight to grab a pen and a piece of paper so that they can take notes. I know last week Sister Bernice gave out information, very pertinent information, detailed information. You both did. And that's why I invited most of the ladies to the call tonight. And I had given them the date of July 21st at 8 p.m., I believe, Central Standard Time. We will be having a class. So I want to encourage.
That's 4 p.m. Eastern time. So, Sister, you're the one that asked me to have that time identified on the website, right? Okay. Yeah, but that's not going to – that's not going to be 8 p.m., 8 Central time. So I'll talk to you when I call you.
More about that. Okay.
Yes.
I have some that are on here from Florida, North Carolina, Georgia. You've heard from Sister Rahima, who is in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So I just wanted to make sure that they have pen and paper so that they can take notes. Okay.
All right. Thank
you very much.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Sister Joyce?
Yes, ma'am.
Sister Joyce?
And good evening, everyone. My name is Sister Joyce, and I live here in Oklahoma City. And I am happy to know that you were on the call, because there may be some things that I may need you to help me to fill in some of these gaps with. But I just wanted to say, I am happy, Sister Stone and everyone, for coming on to the call this evening, as well as bringing your guest. Because as you've been saying, Sister Aisha, and I'm seeing it more and more, we must duplicate ourselves. I'm going to tell you guys, it is so much through FEMA that we never, ever truly realized. I mean, you know, we all know that FEMA does this or FEMA does this, that, and the other. However, they do things that we know about, but we just go about everyday life taking it for granted. And the webinar that I was on yesterday, it covered civil rights before, during, as well as after a disaster. And for me, it was quite eye-opening. I mean, and eye-opening in as much as they deal with the little things, the little intricacies. They, you know, in my economics class, they spoke about microeconomics. That's where you're dealing with the small things, things we take for granted, like a hand railing. You know, you just expect for it to be there, but you don't even ask yourself, how did it get here, or who benefits from it? So it's a lot of things, brothers and sisters, that are going on out here as it pertains to FEMA that we, and those webinars and calls and Zoom calls, as many as of us, because Sister Aisha, as well as myself, we can't cover them all. And they had two today, and it's still dealing with Region 2. They had two today that I wasn't even aware of until I opened up my email this afternoon, and the last one was already in progress. Not that we didn't get pertinent information yesterday, but they were just more or less, I guess, maybe summarizing. I don't know, because I didn't attend. But what I'm saying is there's plenty out here for all all of us to participate in. Like I had said, so many things we take for granted are actually well designed and put in place for our everyday existence. Now, the presenters for this occasion, Bernard and Daniel, they covered disaster preparedness from all three levels, meaning federal, state, as well as local. And they used the model of New York City and how they prepare, I'm saying they're how they prepare to be prepared for disaster. They dealt with things we'd consider as well as things we take for granted. All things are available to us. As Brother Sam and others were speaking of earlier, all things are available to us if we know where to look. And I'm going to tell you, their services range from small to grand. Now, the first speaker, he began his presentation with an overview on emergency management. Now, I'm going to tell you, this was very, very informative. Majority of the things they discussed in that hour and a half, it may take us two or three sessions to get through it all because of the importance and the information that was contained in it, as far as I'm concerned. Then he did a presentation and an overview on emergency management, focusing on four phases. This is what Sister Aisha was speaking of a while ago. One, prepare. Two, respond. Three, recovery. And the last one, Sister Aisha, being mitigation. Throughout their discussion, they focused on equity, in other words, inclusion. And the people or the population they were looking at were primarily low income, those who lack resources, lack of information, and those who are disproportionately impacted by whatever disaster that we will be experiencing. The areas of concentration were two components of the population, and they looked at children and older adults. And the information they shared can be easily used by any place for any of those four phases. Some areas were how they go about maintaining their people health. You know, some may have any number of health issues, but one of the first things they look at is how to maintain their health, independence, and access to transportation. They also discussed power outages. I mean, these are when we come into our homes, we hit that switch, and we expect to have some lights. But they look at power outages, especially for those who rely on it to function. In other words, if you're one of the people who may have those electric wheelchairs, you know, we just take it for granted. But they have to be charged, and they have to have a way in order to do that. And how assistance is provided in storms. And they spoke about winter storms. Fire evacuation, especially if you live in those high rises. And heat and cool emergency access. They also discussed active shooters as well as terrorism activities. The other speaker, Daniel, he spoke about equity and equality. And he said, as he described them as custom tools that considered individual circumstances and fair and impartial treatment of all. Now, Sister Aisha, he also was speaking of equity, and he talked about the outer-driven decision-making, integration of civil rights legislation, the role that they play, and who to assist. And then it was saying that how is it and why is it important? Because we must look after all in a time of disaster. some, you know, if you are, you know, up on things, I suppose, you may know what to do. But the masses, what we call the little people, they may need assistance in finding some help. So as Sister Aisha was saying a while ago, or Sister Rahima, we must be able to provide these services to everyone at every level. So right there, I'm gonna stop for now and allow Sister Aisha to come in, and maybe it will, when we speak on it some more, I'll be able to add some more information. But I just don't want to be just a talking head. I want everyone to have an opportunity to get some feedback.
Yeah, thank you so much. And let me just say, you know, you gave great feedback. And Region 2, that's New York, New Jersey, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands. And the storms that are very common in this region are hurricanes, floods, wildfires, winter storms, landslides, droughts, and tornadoes. And so this entire presentation that we both listened to, it was dealing with basically how to enforce and how to comply, more like how to comply with Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. Folks,
yes.
Title VI, the Civil Rights Act of 1964, has not changed. It is still the same Civil Rights Act. And therefore, and also, their discussion was to be in compliance with President Biden's Executive Order 13985, which is recently, and his executive order emphasize the advancing racial equity, to advance racial equity amongst the underserved communities, okay? So if any of you would like to look at it, and many of you probably have already looked at Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 64, you will see that, just look at probably Section 308 of the Stafford Act, that's part of it, you will see that this is the same thing that we dealt with 30 years ago. I dealt with it 30 years ago as affirmative action officer for Rutgers University.
Yep.
I had to enforce the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And so they are saying the same thing that we said 30 years ago, and some said it even before, way before me. But it is still assuring equity, racial equity. And as long as we stand on the platform of Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 64, it's in total compliance. Whatever we decide, and based on the decision of what we need in our community, and if it's in compliance with the equity guidelines in this act, they can't deny us, because we have it on record that they have come out and said we are going to be in compliance with Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 64. And that's what that office, that Civil Rights Office in the different regions, is set up to do. And so this is giving us the platform by which we can demand, as long as we're in compliance with that Civil Rights Act and President Biden's executive order, we will be in good shape. But we got to do it, and we can do it, because we know how to do it. There are many people in our community that know how to design programs in compliance with Civil Rights Title VI, Civil Rights Act of 64. So, Joyce, I'm so glad you went, because the things that you brought out is really putting us in compliance and showing us that, hey, this is not rocket science. we can do this thing. Okay? So did that make sense?
One of the things that I appreciated was when they were given the example of the apple tree, and they were saying that on the right side of the tree, the apples were growing, but they were growing, you know, not a lot of apples were on the branch. However, on the right side of the tree, on the left side of the tree, apples were hanging almost to the ground because it was just that heavily laden with apples. But the thing about it was there was a barrier. The folk on the right side of the apple tree couldn't see what was going on the left side of the apple tree. So that's where they were coming in talking about equity and how we have to break those barriers down so that the ones who were on the right side of that apple tree will also have an opportunity to taste or pick from the left side. So this is what they were talking about. Now, one of the things that he did mention was that FEMU, is it S-E-M? Let me see. I will find that in my notes because I didn't necessarily know what that stood for. But they talked about their community policies, putting things in large print. I mean, they're doing things that will allow us to respond if we just open our eyes and see what's going on. Look, brothers and sisters, it's a lot. Like the sister said, when she gets ready for us to all come together for this proposal or however we're going to handle it, this is really going to be very, very nice because it's there for us. And we need to get out here and get back trying to get a piece of it. Yes, sir.
Sister Aisha Bynum again. Would you please reiterate that how many Joyce Williams we need to be trained?
We need Joyce. We need hundreds and hundreds of Joyce Williams to be trained, maybe thousands of them to be trained, because we all, most of all of us, we have all of these degrees from universities coming out of Wazoo. But that doesn't mean that we are trained in this area. But we are certainly trained to be the pioneers in pushing forth this new day that we are coming into. We haven't had to deal with climate change before to this extent. So this is a new day. This is a new struggle. This is a new revolution, however you want to name it. But we need many Joyce Williams. We need many Aishas to be able to, I have to replicate myself, Sister Tom, because we need many trainers. We need many Joyce Williams. We need many people who can put the program together. So I encourage anyone that's listening to us, if you want to make sure that you have total access to all of the training, Sister Joyce is going to have it because I might not have to send everything out, but I try to send everything I get in my box over to her and to Brother Bynum. And Joyce, if you would send it out to a network, and then people start saying, yeah, I want to be a trainer. I want to be part of the group that's going to put the program together. And part of the group we will set up the workshop. We will train you how to run the workshop. Just run the workshop. Okay? And
yes,
we can work on that. We need that. Okay?
Okay,
but
yes,
the thing that you're talking about, Joyce, is the LEP LEP. And it's really limited English proficiency, and that is a new part Title 6 of the Civil Rights Act. Okay. And that's new.
The question I had, though, was they talked about the FEMIS model. I may have it, maintaining health, independence, access to transportation, things of this nature. But I'll have to get more. I'll get more information on that.
But that's what they have given it a name. It is not a name written in stone. They have given it a name for their convenience. But those same attributes are probably called something else in other regions or by other people. But we know what our community needs, and so we will define our needs. And if we want to give it an acronym, we'll give it an acronym.
Okay.
But it's the same thing. It's the same thing. Okay. So any questions? If not, Sister Swan, because we're going to run out of, we don't want to run out of time. Sister Bernice? Is Sister Swan still on?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was on mute. I'm listening to a lot of things that have already been said and have a few questions there. With the training and the duplicated training and the workshops, I know it's by region, but is there some way, since we're talking at least thousands of persons trained or at least learning how to, and through the training deciding if they want to be those, I guess, who will be in charge of implementation of whatever they're learning. Are you limited in how you can present this so that persons can attend at their leisure almost when they can't officially attend the actual sessions that are in progress? Because people are so busy with other things and they might want to at least be trained, but they can't necessarily take that time that's set aside for the training and the workshops.
Yes.
Is there any medium for that?
Mr. Bernie?
Well,
I'm sorry.
There has to be a system, and it has to be consistent. What we're going to do, we're going to publish the dates for the training starting in August. We've already published July. We'll soon publish August, September, and October training. And hopefully in some of those months, those 3 months that we will be publishing, people will be able to take the time to be trained. And the reason we want the people to come to the training session is because it's this training session that we will get FEMA to completely certify, and we will be able to say that the people went through this training session and they got and they are the trainers. So people, it makes it very difficult if we don't have a structured training. There are certain things that have to be said, and there's a certain procedure that we want to continue with, and we know that that is the procedure by which we can get it certified. Okay?
Good. Thank you for that. And then the next question then would be...
May I add also, now, on each of the sessions that I have attended, they have where you can go and... And just like with Uncle Roy, just like with Brother Bilal and them, where you can go and review the past sessions, you can also go and review the sessions that, like the one that I went to yesterday, last week, and the ones that are upcoming, you can go and look at them just to give you an idea and maybe a groundwork to where to start when you do start your training session. Thank you.
Well, We don't need them to tell us how to train. We need to train. The training session is set up based on FEMA's guidelines of information that they have researched and put out there. And because I am already FEMA certified in both housing recovery and preparedness, I'm bringing that knowledge into a training program that we can say that we as a community have a certified program, and we want them to put funds into what we're doing. When I say we, I'm talking about our partner, Black Belt Wall Street, and all of you all, and in our community. There has to be some vehicle out front that can call these people to task. Because if we don't, and just merging into what they do, it's not calling them to task. It's just them once again using our presence to get more funding for their programs. And that has been the history.
Okay. So thank you.
I would send, if anybody want to see that webinar again, I'll send the link to it. So if you want to look at it, I'll send it over to Sister Joyce, and she can get it out to everyone. But if all you right. want to see that, but let's think in terms, we have to do this ourselves, because up until now, the federal agencies have not been able to define the needs of our community. We must define them, and we must put it in a way that they can't reject it, because it's going to be in compliance with all of the regulations and the regulations that they have put out.
The next thing I was going to address then is, because there are different regions and therefore different needs according to regions, are we saying that the workshops for the certification are going to be graduating from one thing to another, or is it the same workshop and you just sign in for just one of the workshops, or do you need a continuum?
It's the same workshop. It's the same workshop every schedule. It's the workshop, I might get a little bit, is something developed, but it's the same workshop on preparedness.
So then, very good. So that helps with my next thought. So the final thought would be, it is so general that depending on what region you're in, the general workshop is so helpful that it will be suitable for any of the regions, rather than each region having to have its own.
Precisely.
It's the same thing. It's the same thing that you need, the same action that you need to take, your plan, your this and that. It's the same thing in all of the documentation from the federal agency. The difference is you will know the regions you are in, because you can go on our website in the next week or so and look on the resources, put in your state, and it will tell you your region, and it will tell you your contact people in those regions, and it will tell you the kind of storms that are coming in your region. That's what we're putting in.
Okay,
thank
you so much.
Sister Aisha, brothers and sisters, this is what we said when we initially took on this type of training. We know that these disasters, and we looked at Katrina, and we looked at all of these disasters that we have had, but the disasters that are coming, and they're already here on top of us. After this training, all of the regions,
There are 10.
All 10 regions, you, after training, will be able to go and do the paperwork for recovery and release in all of those 9 regions. So it doesn't have to be in your region. You're doing it in your own region is big enough because of all the states that are within your region. But at the same time, like we've been informed, Society has informed us, they only have, 150,000 or less than 150,000 trained throughout the nation. Is that correct, Ms. Society, as I speak?
Less than that, far less than that. Now, remember, we're talking about disaster preparedness, and that's the first step to mitigation. That's the very first thing that we have to do, is to prepare ourselves for the disaster. We're not getting into recovery in this training. It's strictly preparedness. And that's what all the federal agencies said is the very first thing, is you have to be prepared before. And so when we get to recovery, which will probably be sometime next year, that will take us to another level. But with preparedness, we have enough of a tool set to be able to implement programs to go after funding for the entire country of people who are prepared. And it's the numbers that we are looking for. And we are looking for the people that have the information. And now, like I said, and FEMA just recent report said that since 2013, preparedness has only increased in America by 2%.
Wow.
Preparedness is the key.
Society,
if you're not prepared, the recovery is going to be even more of a disaster for you.
Precisely.
But it's about preparedness. Yes.
Sister Aisha, we only got about 5 or 10 more minutes, but since you are on the subject and we were talking about applying as to how we can apply and get maybe grants or what have you to be representatives or get the grants to do this disaster recovery. I want to now bring on Miss Baker. I think Miss Baker, we had asked for her earlier, but I think I saw her where she has finally come on. Miss Baker, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm here.
Miss Baker, of course, Sister Aisha, I think I may have introduced you to her. So she is an expert grant writer in addition to being a very experienced accountant. So again, Ms. Baker, you've been hearing what is being proposed.
Yes.
Maybe you want to just give a couple minutes and let folks know something about getting grants approved.
Well, I just heard a little bit of it. We've having storms here too, so it's like, it keep going in and out, so I'm just trying to hang on. So I only heard like bits and pieces. So.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, in that case, again, maybe some real general information, maybe 2 or 3 minutes on, or maybe when you come back with us and hear more of the program,
maybe
you can emphasize more of how these grants and can be issued to those that are trained and ready to go into all of the different regions for the disaster itself. So with that,
Ms. Baker, can you give a contact number?
Yes, my contact number is 301-332-6015.
6015, and we can have a talk. That's okay with you.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Sister Ashley,
you can just give me a call.
Thank you.
I'm trying to hear you.
we're gonna need a grant writer.
Okay.
Many of them.
Brother Bilal, with the time that's left over, since we have about 4 minutes, I'll do that part 3 next week, and that'll be on the disaster preparation first aid for supplies for your home and car, because I wanted to get very schooled on what was being said tonight, and thank you so much for those presentations.
Also, if I may be allowed to add, I would like for us to use the hashtag you know, we were talking about these kids, and the kids said, we need a hashtag. So I had decided disaster preparedness training. Hashtag disaster preparedness training. Thank you.
Oh, thanks for bringing that up, Sister Wim. And let me just say, both of these sisters, Sister Swan, Sister Wim, both of them are my blood sisters. So I'm proud of both of them, and both of them are highly educators. But anyway, I wanted to just say, for the folks of you who are signing up to become members or what have you, or to listen to the programs, you've heard the registration fee. Our registration fee, of course, is, and Sister Aisha, it takes a couple of minutes, but Sister Aisha also let them know about the proposal of bringing, if they can't afford it, groups of fives that come in, we will pay the registration fee. I'm going to turn it back over to you, and you close us out.
And please do get your people to register for the program. And, yes, groups of five, if you can't pay, you're going to contact Brother Bynum, and Black Belt Wall Street will make a way for this to happen. And there has to be this is such a nominal fee. We're living in a world of technology. And for these kinds of training, virtual training, we need a lot of front-end and back-end technological people. The technical staff alone is amazingly, they're very talented, but these people, they work, and they do a great work, and we have to pay them. So this is a nominal fee. But if your group cannot afford a group of five, Brother Bilal, please contact him. Okay. But remember, this training is Saturday. If you can't make Saturday, the 16th, make the 21st, 23rd, the 30th, the 26th. But let's get started. Let's get started. Okay? So that's all I have to say, Brother Bilal. I think that... Thank you.